from the 8th chapter, and that's entitled Attaining the Supreme. And here Krishna speaks about how to meditate upon him as being relevant to the time of death when one leaves this body. And the other one is according to what different yogis or gyanis think about or meditate upon, what type of destinations they achieve. This chapter is very clear negation of that philosophy that all paths lead to the same place. Because here Krishna points out that there are different paths and they all have different destinations. Therefore, one should be very clear where one is going. Because one of the path that someone is on will lead one to an appropriate destination. Anyway, here Krishna is talking about the type of meditation one should have while living. So he says, Tasmat saveshu kaleshu mamanushmara gitmacha mayarpitam mano buddhir mam e vaishashi asamshaya. He says, therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting with your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without a doubt. So just once again, or better yet, if we all repeat together, therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna.
You should always think of me in the form of Krishna.
And at the same time, carry out your prescribed duty of fighting.
Carry out your prescribed duty of fighting.
With your activities dedicated to me.
With your activities dedicated to me.
And your mind and intelligence fixed on me.
And your mind and intelligence fixed on me.
You will attain me without doubt.
You will attain me without doubt.
And Srila Prabhupada writes, short purport, this instruction to Arjuna is very important for all men engaged in material activities. The Lord does not say that one should give up his prescribed duties or engagements. One can continue them and at the same time think of Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna. This will free one from material contamination and engage the mind and intelligence in Krishna. By chanting Krishna's names, one will be transferred to the supreme planet, Krishna Loka, without a doubt. Here Krishna starts using this word tasma, and he's referring to the previous verse. Previous verse, Krishna says, Jam yam vāpi smaram bhāvam cajantante kalivaram. So he says that whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. He's saying that one will have a certain state of consciousness at the time when he's leaving this body. You will think of something. We always have to think of something. The mind is naturally thinking. So what you think of at the time of death, that will dictate what destination one achieves. But this verse then implies, but it's not that you just automatically think of me at the time of death and you attain me. He says, therefore, if you want to attain me, you should practice. You have to practice that in this lifetime. So then he's here now talking about how to actually practice that type of consciousness, tasmat, by which at the time of death one naturally will think of Krishna. Just as in common day activities, if you do something enough, it becomes habit forming and it happens automatically. Something should be automatic at the time of death. To start practicing spiritual life in old age and at the time of death is not a good, it's not a good time, because generally people don't learn things at that time of life. Rather, they cash in on whatever they've already learned. So, youth is the time when one is meant to be acquiring transcendental knowledge, learning how to control the senses, the mind, directing the intelligence. And if that becomes habit forming, then when one is leaving this body, and leaving this body is not a pleasurable event, very often it can be very painful. So, Maharshi Kulshekhar therefore prays that, what does he say? Krishna Tvadiya Pankaja Panjarantam Madhya Iva Vishatumina Saraja Hangsa. He says, when I leave this body, my mind is going to be disturbed, my body, life airs, will be plagued by different diseases. So, I think everyone has experience of pain to some degree. And doctors know that when people are in great pain, it's all absorbing, it just consumes them. So, when someone is and it's not like you just, you know, bang your thumb with a hammer and then it goes away, but actually persistent and developing and growing pain, it's not the time to start practicing spiritual life. In general, people don't do well at that time because they're just too demanding. Therefore, it should already be habitual by then. It should be spontaneous. That's what we call spontaneous devotional service, that by practice, at that stage, it has already become spontaneous. So here, Krishna is talking about that type of practical practice, and it's very practical because he says, sarveshu, tasmat sarveshu kaleshu. Kala means time, and sarva means at all times. And Prabhupada makes it very clear. He says people are engaged in materialistic activities. Materialist activities means we're working. So when we work, we do different types of things. We do bookkeeping, or we're lawyers, or we're doctors, or we're engineers, or anyway, it's all material activity. So someone may say, all right, but I'm busy. And that's generally the common argument. Well, I'm too busy to practice spiritual life. I have so many other things. And of course, you're busy during the day with your work, you're busy at night eating, you're busy early in the morning getting ready for work, and so on. So if one is always busy, then ultimately you have no time for anything else. And then you end up at old age with nothing else other than having been busy, the result of having been busy, which is that you're a nervous wreck. So here Krishna says, that's all right, you can be busy, but you can also think. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anushmara. You're busy, but you're thinking. Now, of course, there's that type of employment or that type of work where you really have to concentrate. If you're a surgeon, then better that you're thinking about the patient you're operating on, then get carried away with Bhagavad Gita shlokas. But still, despite the fact that you're doing that, there are times when you're not particularly in the operating theater, when one is walking here and there, when one is sitting and one relaxing, and particularly when one is reflecting on why am I doing this? What is the purpose of all of this? And that the purpose is very clear. Well, I have to maintain myself. Everyone has to maintain themselves. But in order to cultivate Krishna consciousness, in order to ensure that my family can also be Krishna conscious, and in that way one is thinking about Krishna. And then Srila Prabhupada here, in context of or Kali Yuga, he says, well, the easiest way of achieving all of this is by chanting Hare Krishna. Now, you can't chant Hare Krishna when you're in the operating theater, because chanting Hare Krishna can be a very mechanical activity that can just go on even in the background, but it actually keeps us in contact with transcendental sound vibration, meaning that it keeps us in contact with Krishna. So it's good. It's a good thing to do, chanting Hare Krishna. So this becomes the most practical way. For instance, Mamanushmaradyudyacha. So Krishna says, while you're fighting, you should think of me. Now, fighting is very similar to being in an operating theater. One slip and you're dead. In the operating theater, one slip and the patient's dead. On the battlefield, one slip and you're dead. But in any case, it's a life or death issue. So you have to be absorbed. And Arjuna could be in the middle of a battle and all of a sudden, you know, be absorbed in Krishna's pastimes and so on and getting carried away in that. But he can also chant Hare Krishna. He can chant Hare Krishna. Because chanting Hare Krishna isn't a distraction. So Srila Prabhupada is saying that yes, even though one may be engaged in different types of material activities. And then Prabhupada gives a very nice example of this. He says that just like a cook, he says that ladies, after they become expert in cooking, then it just comes automatically. They're just like, you know, mixing spices and stirring, and they don't have to think about it. So he says in the same way that one can actually be doing either, one can be performing one's activities. If the activities would be a form of a sort of a mechanical nature, for instance, if you're in some, factory raising levers like this, then you've got a lot of opportunity to be thinking about a lot of things. It doesn't take up a lot of energy. On the other hand, if it does, then the chanting, that could also be put on automatic pilot. In either case, one is thinking about Krishna. And what Krishna says, mayarpitam manobudhir mamevas. He says, if you practice being absorbed in me like this, if your mind is absorbed in me, mami vaishashiya samshaya. Krishna uses this word, asamshaya, often. He says, without any doubt. He says, then you'll achieve me without any doubt. So why? Because we have the saying also, practice makes perfect. You just keep practicing something. You practice it, practice it, practice it. And in time it will become perfect. So we need to also practice. And this type of practice requires that there's also a certain degree of impetus and preparation, and that preparation is what we should have in the morning, in a morning program where we actually gear our minds to chanting Hare Krishna by sitting and concentrating and doing nothing else, by standing before the deity or the picture of the Lord, by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and that gets that reminds us that we should actually be mayarpitam manobudhir mami vaishasya samsha, that we should be actually thinking about Krishna, otherwise we'll forget. In other words, you can't just go to work and practice spiritual life at work. You can chant Hare Krishna anywhere at any time, but that's a different thing than sitting down and making a full-time sadhana of that chanting, like we chant on Jantamala. It's different. It's different in the sense that one is a concentrated meditation, which is really meant to go deep into spiritual life and purify the heart, and the other one is a regular practice, which is meant to always keep us in touch with Krishna, regardless of what we do. But there's a certain time of the day when we shouldn't be doing anything else. So sometime we have to dedicate to Krishna. If someone says, I'm too busy, then don't be surprised one day when you're calling out to Krishna and Krishna says, sorry, I'm too busy. So a certain amount of time we have to dedicate to Krishna in the morning when that's just exclusively for him. And that's generally Udula Arura Purava Bhagi. Early in the morning before the sun is rising, that's the best time to do that. The mind is peaceful, you've gotten up, there's energy, the outside world is still asleep. So it's an appropriate time. And then it's just me and Krishna. It's just you and Krishna, and I'm not doing anything else. And then later on, when I'm doing so many other things, then I try to maintain that concentration. So by doing that type of practice, one will remember to do this. Otherwise, we'll forget. And days will go by, and years will go by, and lifetimes can go by before we remember again that, I should be thinking about Krishna. So with your activities dedicated to me, and he says, my arpita, this is a principle of karma yoga, that one should perform all one's activities. Yat karoshi, yadashnasi, yajjuhoshi, dhatya, tat kurushva, madarpanam. So madarpanam, here Krishna is also saying, my arpita, that one should do everything for Krishna's pleasure. And how do you do something for Krishna's pleasure? Well, it has to benefit him in some way. It has to benefit, you have to benefit Krishna by the results of your work. The results of your work is your money, it's your energy, it's your time, some form or way by which Krishna is being benefited. And when you do that, then the tendency will be that, yes, now I am working for Krishna, because you're giving the result. Result. When you give the result of something, then you work for that thing. If you don't give the result for something, then it's just all sentiment. And that sentiment is not enough. And mami vaisheshya samshaya. So Krishna here is telling us, make the effort. He does not make any requirement here for perfection. He said, you just make the effort and you'll achieve me without a doubt. It's very difficult to be successful in Krishna consciousness in Kali Yuga because the conditions are so stringent. The contamination is very strong. And our inclination is generally just dwindling more and more. So for us to be Krishna conscious, I don't know if you've noticed, but it's not easy. So we're very much dependent upon Krishna's mercy. And jidatamam prapadyanti, and Krishna reciprocates according to the effort that we make. Effort is one thing and result is something else. If someone is honest, makes wholehearted effort, his best to actually surrender to Krishna, then yoga kshema bahamiyam. Well, Krishna takes into consideration the fact that we are no longer yogis, we don't have a great inclination for spiritual perfection, and we're mixed up in a society that hasn't the faintest idea about spiritual life, hasn't the faintest inclination for spiritual life. And this is not just the so-called materialistic branch of society, but even the so-called spiritualists, even the churches and the synagogues, they have absolutely zero idea what spiritual life is about. They have buildings, they have rituals, they have so-called activities, but what is the soul? Is God a person? What is the means for achieving God? It just more or less doesn't exist. Very, very hard to extrapolate even from those scriptures. So in this type of atmosphere, then it's really difficult to apply Krishna's teaching. Still, if one makes the effort and does one's best, then Krishna says, Mami Vaisyasya Samshaya. Then you'll come to me without a doubt. And then he says, abhyasa. This is the next verse. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasana nyagana paramam purusham divyam. Abhyasa means practice. He says, you just keep practicing. but we have to practice. So now there's two types of practice that we mentioned here. One type of practice, which is exclusively dedicated to Krishna, and the other practice, which is incidental to everything else that we're doing. So that more or less could cover all of our day except for when we're sleeping. Now, if you can think about Krishna when you're sleeping, then you're advanced. But even if you don't, anyway, that's understandable. We're unconscious at that time. But at least those hours when we're conscious, then somehow or another, everything should be connected. Even the way we speak, you know, people call out, they have this automatic say, oh my God. It doesn't mean it. It's not purifying. It's something, because we're talking about God, but what's God? Who's God? But instead of saying, oh my God, I said, oh, Hare Krishna. It immediately means something else, and it immediately reminds me, oh yeah, that's right, I have to. So it's automatic. These things happen automatically. And there are so many things that we do automatically, and Krishna will elaborate on this further in the 9th chapter, and then even in the 10th chapter. Punyoganda Pitivamscha. You see a flower, you smell a flower, think, oh, Krishna designs this flower. The color of this flower can remind you of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the smell of that flower is part of the aroma of the earth, because flowers take aroma out of the earth. Different flower takes out a different aroma. All of these aromas are in the earth. The smell of a rose is in the earth, the smell of jasmine is in the earth, but different flowers take out different smell. That's Krishna. That's part of just Krishna's aroma. And above all, Bhagavatam also says that flowers are like Krishna's smile. So when we learn how to think like that, we drink a glass of water, rasaham. Oh, the taste of this. Why am I drinking water? I'm thirsty. What happens when I drink water? Has the ability to slake your thirst. That's Krishna. That's Krishna's potency. And everything that I look at, everything is part of Krishna's energy. So Krishna then says, Yoma Pashyati Sarvatra Saram Samaya Pashyati. So someone who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, it's a practice, abhyasa yoga yuktina. We have to practice it, but if we practice it, we get into the habit. Oh, this is black, it's black just like Krishna. Hardness, Krishna's limbs are considered to be like hard, sometimes like lightning bolt, especially when he's fighting with demons. So everything is, because everything is Krishna's energy. So to see how things represent Krishna's potencies, and to see how things are udipan, or things are that make us remember Krishna, this type of practice is called sadhana. And when we practice this, then yoman pashyati sarvatra, then we see Krishna everywhere. And Krishna says, yoman pashyati sarvatra, a person is never lost to Krishna because he sees Krishna everywhere, so how can he be lost? But it requires effort. If we don't make the effort, it doesn't come. It requires practice. But you practice, and then it'll become habit. Just like, you know, how you acquire habits. You do something enough, and it becomes habit forming. So the whole idea is that we practice chanting Hare Krishna, we practice thinking about Krishna, we practice relating everything that we see to Krishna, it becomes habit forming, and that habit, that will become, determine our consciousness at the time of death, and that will then determine our destination. And what happens when we think about Krishna at the time of death? Then we go to Krishna. Yanti deva pita deva pitin yanti prim bhutaha bhutani yanti bhuta yanti mam yajin hopi mam. You think of demigods, you go to demigods. You think of your father, you go where your father is. You think of so many things. You think of your dog, you become a dog. But you think of Krishna, and you go to Krishna. So So practice thinking about Krishna, and then asamshaya. Krishna is giving us so many places. He says, Mahasuchaha, asamshaya. Krishna is giving us his promise. Pratigya, Tavagovinda. Krishna is giving us his promise. Kunteya, Pratijanihi, Nami Bhakta, Pranashati. Anyone have any questions?
It's probably really relevant about Saddam Hussein then, because he really captured the world imagination recently. He read out a statement and prayed to Allah, and then he was hung. Now, it doesn't happen every day that we hear of it and even see pictures of it. So is Allah equated with Krishna? And secondly, if a man right at the end says this statement like this, or somebody comes and says something to him, or even gives him tulsi in his mouth, and he was whatever he was in the past, is it relevant then? And how we as a Vaishnava should interpret? Because there's a swing of opinion. Now suddenly he was a very good man, apparently. And how would you approach it as a Vaishnava?
Even when Srila Prabhupada was talking about Gandhiji, who called out Ram when he was leaving his body, but Gandhi's concept of Ram wasn't a authorized concept, wasn't a Vaishnava concept. He had a Maiva conception. Therefore, he's not going to go to Ram. And at best, his calling out is offensive, if not worse than that. So, the concept one has about who Allah is, who Krishna is, who Ram is, very much determines actually what happens when one remembers him at the time of death. So here, Krishna is telling us to think about him at the time of death, but he's giving us the whole Bhagavad Gita also so that we have a clear understanding of who he is. If someone has a wrong understanding of who Krishna is, or a wrong understanding of what God is, then he's not going to get that same type of... If someone does not have a Mayavad conception, then some benefit will be there. As far as, you know, what's saying Allah's name, of course, it's connected with God. What the concept of God is, and what his concept of God is, I don't know. But certainly, that conception will determine the type of benefit that he will get. For instance, Shishupala was very inimical towards Krishna. Now, he saw Krishna at the time of death, but because he was inimical, therefore he merged into Krishna's body. Kaivalya narukayati tidash purakasha pushpati, which, from the Vaishnava conception, is like going to hell. On the other hand, the soldiers on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and they were fighting out of duty, but they weren't inimical towards Krishna. Just by seeing Krishna, they attained Vaikuntha. So both were seeing Krishna, but because they had a different attitude to Krishna, they got a different result. So everything has to be taken in context. Here's a verse in the 8th chapter amongst 18 chapters. It has to be taken in context with everything else that Krishna says. So if we do everything else that Krishna says and follows, then we attain him. We can't be eclectic and just select certain things or just ignore things altogether.
Gandhiji always carried Gita with him all throughout. It's well known. So I beg to differ if you say that his Hari Ram did not have the concept behind it. whenever it's all his autobiography, whenever he was in trouble, the only book he opened was Gita.
Yes, but the only problem is he didn't believe that Krishna was a historic person. He didn't believe that he was God.
He read Krishna's book.
But that's his statement, not mine. That's Gandhi's statement. He did not believe that Krishna was God.
He wouldn't accept Krishna as Murti form.
No.
I've read the Gita comment to Gandhi for my family dissertation. He states in the introduction that if Krishna, who is speaking Bhagavad Gita, is the same Krishna who was harassed on the gopis, then I don't want to know. This from his Gita comment.
So you can't be selective. You have to understand Krishna as Krishna explains himself. Then when you follow that, you get that appropriate. Gandhiji is one person who carries the Gita. There are millions of people in India who are carrying the Gita, and many of them having the same or even much more offensive attitude towards Krishna. For one reason or another. So, well-meant sentiment, it may be well-meant, but if it's offensive, then that's the result that will be there. So we can't, when it comes to Bhagavad Gita, that's why Prabhupada presented it as it is, Bhagavad Gita has to be accepted as Krishna's saying. You can't say, well, if this is the same person who's dancing with some gopis, then I reject them. What is the meaning of reading the Gita? In every religion, there's so many people walking on. Now, what do we do with all the people who are blowing themselves up in the name of the Quran? And they're walking around with the Quran in their pockets. And just because they have the book, but they don't understand it. There's no religion that advocates that. Or even his concept that, well, Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita is all about violence. How do you get non-violence out of the Bhagavad Gita? You can't. There's no way to turn it upside down, shake it around, but this is what it's all about.
Maharaj, when you're saying that the demons, some Shishupal was inimical, that's why he got Sayuja. We were reading Krishna book and was it Pandraka? Pandraka, when he got Saruka. How did he get that? Because he was also inimical.
He was, but his he was inimical towards Krishna. His inimical towards Krishna was because he really wanted to have this forearm form. He wanted to be like Krishna. And I think probably studying the commentaries would explain that in detail. But that desire must have been much more overriding than him having such a very deep, very, very deep-born inimical feeling, which Shishupal had since birth. I mean, he hated Krishna since he was born. What's his name? Pandraka had this real fixation that he wanted to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there are. And it may be just a fine line that differentiates the benefits received between one and the other. But one will then achieve one benefit and someone else another. Agasura also received Sayuja Mukti, but Putana also went to the spiritual world. So it's their attitude and how that attitude actually dominates, even though there may be a sense of, for instance, when Putana, she saw Krishna, she actually recognized Krishna's greatness. And although she was driven by her temperament, her habits, she was a Rakshasi and so on, but at the same time, she had this person can destroy the whole universe. He's so powerful. So that was some Shraddha, that was some faith. She had some beginnings of some faith that, oh, he's great. And but that was her second nature, to kill babies. So she did that. And therefore, that weighed in her favor. And Krishna just looked at Uddhava. Uddhava says, Aho Bhakistanam. He points out how, as one of showing how Krishna, how magnanimous Krishna is, that here's this witch who smeared poison on her breast and wanted to kill Krishna. And still Krishna accepted him like his nurse. He didn't look at the bad quality, because it wasn't that she really hated Krishna personally, and rather she had some appreciation when she was able to come close. She was just really following orders, and this was her nature. So that's sort of sinful. This other attitude of my values is sort of a very unique mentality that in one sense makes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, makes it better that they never practice spiritual life than practice it the way they did. Because it's not reformable. Can't make do anything with it. Either they just completely change their mentality by the association of Vaishnavas, or they just go to hell. Because they're sort of incorrigibly envious.
It's kind of to the point of thinking of Krishna at the time that sometimes it is seen that the devotees practice spiritual life with all seriousness. At the time of death, something happens, they go into coma or something. What happens to these devotees?
We have to leave it up to Krishna. You know that verse in the Upanishad says, don't forget the service that I've done. Of course, you don't have to remind Krishna. Krishna doesn't. We can't really second guess what it is that's going on. But we have that faith that devotees who serve Krishna with Priti Purvakam, then Yoga Kshema Bahamiha, whatever the external appearances are there, Krishna will reciprocate and reward them. Someone may go into a coma, but, you know, coma is just, it's a place where we don't see what's going on, that's all. So it would be much nicer that if we're able to see the devotees talking to Krishna, and that increases our faith. But that's not necessarily the reality. We may not be able to penetrate into that, but what happened, Krishna's not bound by coma, neither are devotees, particularly if Krishna's reciprocating with them. So we just need to have that faith. Whatever we see from our perspective, Krishna's always true to his promise, and he never forgets the service rendered by his devotee. Especially lifelong service and sincere service. And
could it be, Maharaj, that we have to reinterpret coma the way, because we say intelligence and mind is part of the body. The soul is still there. Maybe if I can't say Hare Krishna, if I train my soul, even though we say as doctors it is unconscious.
The soul's not unconscious.
Yes, the soul is still conscious in some.
Yes. Yeah.
If you learn to chant with the soul, we don't know how what the soul is doing inside.
Yeah.
So we reinterpret the idea of unconsciousness. But Western conscious Western idea of unconsciousness is that your intelligence and mind is affected by the fact that the person is there. That's why we're respecting the body. We don't put the machine off stock. Something is alive inside. We don't ask what it is, but we hope it'll come back again, his intelligence and mind. So maybe the soul is still working away inside. If you, as you said, you trained it and with abhyas.
But even then, even just the nature of the karma is that you can't even guarantee that the person isn't conscious. In other words, he's not conscious in the way that we're used to consciousness, but he can be conscious in other way. In other words, he's unconscious in terms of his communication with the external world. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he can't hear. And there are many examples, isn't it, of people who appear externally unconscious and yet they can hear everything that's going on. They're aware. And or you have that example of the soldier who lost most of his brain, but didn't affect his thinking, consciousness, or intellectual capacity whatsoever. So whatever it is, whatever is going on, is going on under Krishna's direction, because Krishna is directly managing a devotee's life. So it's all right. If Krishna wants it to be a coma, then it's a coma. It's up to him. And that's what faith is. Whatever Krishna wants is all right. Shraddha Vishwas Shubhrida Nischoy. This is what this strong determination that I'm in Krishna's hands. I've given myself over to him. I'm in his hands. Now whatever he likes, that's fine.
And you're saying that Mahatma Gandhi was saying Brahmapati's concept was not correct, so it was offensive to Krishna. So when Jamil was thinking of his son, I was just wondering, isn't that also like offensive to Krishna, because he's not thinking of Krishna?
No. No, it's the philosophical conception behind. Jamil had no philosophical conception. He was... And that was just it. He didn't have any negative. He wasn't chanting purely, but he was chanting offenselessly. He wasn't committing an offense, although his offensive chanting was devoid of faith. It wasn't conscious. But still, it had great potency. The potency wasn't that he was liberated by that. Jamil wasn't liberated by his chanting. Jamil had the opportunity, he got freed from his past sinful reaction. And then he got the opportunity to practice devotion. And by his devotional service, he became liberated. His is an example of defenseless chanting. Ashraddha Abhas, faithless chanting. Because he had no philosophical misconception. If someone has a real strong philosophical misconception and an offensive misconception, then that becomes counterproductive. But there are many people, and then there are many examples of you see it everywhere. You see Washorama. People go to the laundry and it just says Washorama. So they don't have any faith in Krishna. They're not thinking about Lord Ram. They're not thinking about Krishna when they say that. But they're also not saying it with any misconception, thinking, oh, Rama, Rama, yeah, this is some, you know, mythological Hindu figure. They don't have any so therefore there's no misconception behind it, but there's no awareness of it either. But it's still potent. It has great potency. And that's why when we're chanting on the street, that chanting is very powerful, because very often people they just hear it for the first time. They whether they joke about it or trying to mimic, imitate or something, but just saying it, it makes a great difference in their lives. And then if they get the right philosophy as to who Krishna is.
Guru Maharaj, sometimes we can be talking with people and it becomes apparent that they have a particular philosophy at variance to our own. Should we try to alter their philosophical thinking, or should we accept them as they are and withdraw from that interaction or conversation?
We all have errant philosophies of one time or another. And our philosophies got gradually changed. If someone's chanting Hare Krishna with the wrong philosophy, we shouldn't tell them to stop chanting Hare Krishna. But we should try to, you know, present the right philosophical idea, right philosophical conception. And if the person's open to logic and reason, if he's a reasonable person, then he'll listen. If someone has some very, very strong vested interest, then he may not be inclined to listen. But reasonable people, they'll listen and argue, and yeah, that sounds reasonable, and then they may accept that, and then we can sort of move on. So yes, we need to change the groundwork, the foundation of the devotions and their activities, and we do that by changing why they're doing things, the basis of why they're doing things. But you know, doesn't necessarily always work by challenge, but rather it goes by nice personal interaction. I think we should stop, right? Take the shot. What?
When is it appropriate to stop now chanting, going from, say, just listening to then, say, Krishna's pastimes and things like this in our meditation during our chapel? When is it
appropriate? This happens naturally. It's like, you know, when does the fruit grow on a tree? And that's how trees are. You just keep watering it, you know. If there's no leaves on, don't worry about the fruit. But first is the leaves, and then there's the flowers, and then there's the fruit. And if you keep watering, then it'll come.
It's not something that you should stop if you start thinking. Looking at Krishna's pictures of him and chanting in front of the deity or something.
Well, you don't have to stop it, no? Okay, Nitai, we take
prasadam? Yes.
Okay. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Nitai go Premanandi, Hari 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 Go.
Shri Jolidev Shivara Maharaj ki jai.